This is Free Talk Live. Normally, we would give you call-in lines where you can join. You could still call in to 855-450-FREE. However, we're doing something that we don't normally do. We are starting off with a guest, and we don't normally do guests on the show, but we've got someone who has been called by many Bitcoin Jesus. That would be Roger Ver joining us all the way from Japan. In studio, it's Daryl.
And Heather.
And Chris.
And Roger, thank you for joining us very early in the morning where you are.
Yeah, always a pleasure to be with you guys bright and early from Japan. It's just after 8 a.m. here.
Well, nice.
Not quite as early as I thought. Okay, but you know, there's some speculations about what is going on with Bitcoin. There's a lot of questions about what is going on. As listeners to Free Talk Live probably are aware, there was the consensus event a few weeks ago where you and several other major players in the Bitcoin field came to an agreement on something called SegWit 2x. Can you explain very, very briefly what Bitcoin is, and then explain what the SegWit 2x is?
So Bitcoin was the very first cryptocurrency in the entire world that enabled anyone to send and receive any amount of money with anyone anywhere in the world instantly. And at the time, it was basically free. And Free Talk Live was the most instrumental radio program in the entire world of spreading that message and spreading adoption and getting more people excited about this technology. And Free Talk Live and myself and a number of others have been so incredibly successful at spreading this, you know, wonderful idea to so many people around the world that now so many people are using Bitcoin that the Bitcoin network is completely full and that people are having to bid against each other for inclusion in that Bitcoin network. And so a few years ago, people started arguing about what the right way is to increase the capacity of the Bitcoin network so that even more people can start to use Bitcoin. And one of those potential technologies is a technology called SegWit. Another was raising the Bitcoin block size.
SegWit being basically an abbreviation of segregated witness.
That's right. And so one side really loves segregated witness, and the other side thinks that we should raise the block size and aren't such big fans of segregated witness. And so in New York a couple of weeks ago, both sides came together and kind of holding their nose, they agreed to give the other side what they want in exchange for what they want in this scaling debate.
Right.
And that was this SegWit 2x proposal. So the SegWit stands for segregated witness. The 2x means a doubling of the Bitcoin block size. And both sides have agreed to go through with both of those options, although neither side really likes the other option.
And my understanding is this is supposed to be rolling out fairly soon, this SegWit 2X?
Yeah, so it comes in stages. The SegWit portion comes first, and then the 2X is supposed to come a little bit later. And that should all of it should happen within this year.
So who ultimately decides like which one of these two options gets used? Is there like a Bitcoin committee or something?
No, I think that is why this civil war within Bitcoin has been so vicious and troubling, and because there is no one person that decides. There's no entity that can decide. It's right. Just kind of everybody as a whole has to agree, and it's not even just the majority. It's kind of the supermajority.
It couldn't be, though, that like some people use one method and some people – what would happen if both methods got used?
So there's a bunch of different scenarios that can take place here, some of which include Bitcoin splitting into multiple different versions of Bitcoin, and then the market will decide which version is actually called Bitcoin and which one the majority of the market uses. With money, there's just huge, huge, huge network effects that people want to be using the same type of money as everybody else. As people in one country know, if everyone else around you is using dollars, that's a huge, huge, huge amount of pressure for you to use dollars as well. Even if you would rather use silver or Bitcoin or something else, if everybody else around you is using one type of money, you kind of get pressured into using that too. And that's kind of what we have going on with Bitcoin at the moment, is Bitcoin has this huge, giant network effect of, you know, tens of thousands of merchants and merchant processors and credit cards that you can use to fund them with Bitcoin. And you know, all your friends and family already have Bitcoin wallets. They might not have a Jax wallet or Ethereum wallet or a Zcash wallet yet. So there's this huge network effect driving people to want to use Bitcoin because of that network effect. But there's a huge divergence in philosophy as to what Bitcoin should be. People like myself think Bitcoin should be cash for everyone in the entire world to use. Another side thinks that it should just be a settlement network used for to settle large transactions. So here we still are all using the same Bitcoin. But, you know, at some point, maybe it would be better if we just go our separate ways and the world gets to decide which version of Bitcoin is the most useful version of Bitcoin. Yeah. And there's a chance that that might happen coming up here, but I don't think that that's a bad thing at all either. We saw that happen with Ethereum. Ethereum split into Ethereum and Ethereum Classic, and both of them are doing much, much, much better than they were at the time of the split. And the market cap is far higher than it was at the time of the split. So if Bitcoin splits into two chains, I don't see that as the end of the world. The market will decide which one is valued, even though I hear the people generally on the other side of this debate saying that that would be a catastrophe. I don't think so at all. I think if Bitcoin were to split, both sides get the exact version of Bitcoin that they want.
Gotcha. So, Roger, this is Chris. If I were to pick anybody I could imagine who would probably have a better feel for where things are at right now, it would be you. Where do you think all the various parties are? Do you see the end of the month? And there's some things that are going to happen on, I guess, July 31st.
August 1st was the date that I had heard for this user-activated soft fork.
Well, there's a couple different deadlines that are fast approaching. If you were to venture a guess, where do you think this is going to go? How is it going to play out?
Yeah, so on August 1st, they're talking about the user-activated soft fork. I think the most likely thing that will happen is that everybody is in a big, you know, huff and puff about it at the moment, just like they were about Y2K. And when Y2K came along, nothing happened at all.
Right.
I think that's likely to be the case with the user-activated soft fork.
And speaking of Y2K, the U.S. federal government just recently closed shop on that Y2K preparedness agency.
That was the best story I've read.
17 and a half years later.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
I'm glad the U.S. government is not involved in Bitcoin.
They're trying to be. Guy, I have a question. Yeah. What are your thoughts on that? Like, as far as like future government involvement, do you think it's going to eventually kind of affect the Bitcoin market?
I think it's already affected the Bitcoin market in a big way. We saw that with the Winklevoss ETF attempt.
Sure.
And eventually the government denied that. And I think that was one of the final things that lots of people were holding on to Bitcoin for and not diversifying into altcoins. And when that got denied, I think a lot of people went and bought some additional altcoins, because if anybody's used altcoins versus Bitcoin at the moment, the altcoins, aside from not having as big of a network effect as Bitcoin, have a much, much better user experience. Their transactions go through right away for a much lower price. And it really pains me when I see people that are generally on the other side of this debate saying people will never use anything other than Bitcoin. Bitcoin has already won. Bitcoin is guaranteed to be the winner in the end. And, you know, I would love for that to be true as the CEO of Bitcoin.com. But the fact of the matter is that it's not true, especially with crypto coins. It's so incredibly easy to switch from one to another. People are going to use the one that provides them with the best level of user experience. And what users of cryptocurrencies want is they want fast transactions for a low fee and not have to wait hours for their transaction to be confirmed, and they don't want to pay multiple dollars. And unfortunately, that's the user experience that Bitcoin has at the moment. And it drives me nuts when I hear people on the other side of this debate saying that it's a good thing that Bitcoin transactions are so expensive, and that it's a good thing that they can be double spent easily, and that it's just fine that they take hours and hours or even days for them to get confirmed. And that's the exact opposite of what anybody that wants to use something as money would want. And I feel like these people don't understand the reasons that Bitcoin came to be used as money in the first place. And those characteristics are being directly and intentionally undermined within Bitcoin. And it has me absolutely terrified as a holder of a whole bunch of Bitcoin and as the owner of Bitcoin.com.
And I'm glad you mentioned the fees, because it seems like the fee problem might be kind of resolved a little bit. Some of the wallets are allowing transactions to be sent for just pennies. Others are still using the average fee that is somewhere in like the $2 range. And Roger, I definitely want your thoughts on this. So if you can please hold on. You know, there's definitely more to discuss here with Bitcoin. The fees, the soft fork, something that I've heard called the user-activated hard fork, and of course, the flippening. This is Free Talk Live.
Yeah!
This is Free Talk Live. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. That is the toll-free call-in line. You can join us, but if you call in, at least for now, please have questions for Roger Ver from Bitcoin.com. And speaking of Bitcoin.com, they actually reported earlier today that Germany's largest largest food delivery service is now accepting Bitcoin. Over 11,000 restaurants connected to this food delivery service.
Sweet.
And you're not going to find that news. Well, you might find it somewhere else, but news.bitcoin.com is definitely the place you want to go to find that news. And they also have forums that are censorship-free and always open at forum.bitcoin.com. There's no bigger Bitcoin believers than the team at bitcoin.com. That's why the site is a one-stop shop for everything you need to get into Bitcoin life. And I understand they have their own Bitcoin wallet now. And, of course, you can play games with Bitcoin, games.bitcoin.com. Learn more about everything related to Bitcoin at bitcoin.com. That's bitcoin.com. We go back to Roger Ver, the proprietor of bitcoin.com. And, Roger, thank you for holding over. There was a question in the last segment about the fee structure, to where it seems like the fees might kind of be, you know, going back to the small amounts of just pennies on transactions, but yet some of the wallets are still using this higher fee structure of, you know, like $2 to $3 a transaction. Is this something that you think once the SegWit 2x gets fully implemented will be completely resolved? Or is there still going to be this civil war, as you called it, of the people that want these higher fees?
I think the civil war is probably still likely to continue because there's these differing ideologies about what Bitcoin should be. And I don't really see a way for those two ideologies to both have the same thing that they want. So one side wants Bitcoin to be a settlement layer. And another site wants Bitcoin to be a peer-to-peer digital cash, as referenced in the original Bitcoin white paper by Satoshi Nakamoto. Mm-hmm. And I'm really feeling frustrated with this whole thing because, you know, I've been involved for Bitcoin for 6.5 years, and I signed up for the digital cash version, and Bitcoin's being morphed and molded and restricted so that it can't be the digital cash. It's winding up just – these people want it to be used as a settlement layer. But when you have 1,000 other cryptocurrencies to choose from, I don't see why people would use Bitcoin at all if it winds up having high fees and take forever for transactions to be get confirmed when you can use, you know, the official wallet of Free Talk Live is the Jax wallet. Sure. It has Shapeshift built right in. You can shift from your Bitcoin to Ethereum to Dash to whatever you want right there. And then, boom, you can send your transactions instantly, very quickly, for basically free again, which is how Bitcoin used to be. And it drives me nuts when I hear people saying that it's a good thing that Bitcoin transactions are slow and expensive, because anybody that's trying to use Bitcoin for payments realizes, no, you want your money to be fast and cheap to use.
I couldn't agree with you more, Roger, and this is Chris again. I operate a small business here in Keene, New Hampshire. And Keene's kind of cool in the fact that we have more Bitcoin-accepting businesses per capita. Arguably, we're kind of a small city, than any other town or city we've been able to find on the planet.
Right.
So we've done really well at getting small businesses to accept it. For me, as a small business owner, the high fees and this trend away from being a highly fungible cash drives me nuts, because I want people to come in and, you know, to buy a soft drink with Bitcoin. That's really cool. Roger, I actually had to talk somebody out of buying a soda a few weeks back, because I'm like, you're going to pay me $1.29 for a can of soda, and you're going to get hit with $2 in fees. It's insanity. And that cannot happen if Bitcoin's to go forward. Second of all, we have a Bitcoin vending machine in our shop. And I know that that puts strain on the operators, and it causes, you know, the rates that we have to charge for Bitcoin purchases to continue.
Right,
to
they've
up.
Actually
Wait,
increased.
What do you mean these fees? I'm kind of confused, because I'm like, I'm not really big into the Bitcoin, but I have like a little blockchain app on my phone.
Sure.
That's what Bruce Fenton. I don't know if you probably know Bruce. I assuming, Roger. Bruce Fenton?
Yeah, of course I know Bruce. Yeah. He's a fantastic guy, and you're lucky to have him recommending wallets to you.
Oh, I love Bruce. He was the one that actually gave me my first Bitcoin. It was at the Massachusetts convention, and I downloaded the app he told me to download, and he gave me like $10, and within like a month it like doubled, and I was like, oh, this is awesome. So, but so now is this whole fees thing new? So if I use the money that's in my little blockchain app, am I going to be charged every time I use it?
Yeah, so I first heard about Bitcoin actually on Free Talk Live about 6.5 years ago. And my pitch for the next 5 or so years was that you can send and receive any amount of money with anyone anywhere in the world basically for free. And then as the network became more congested, I had to change that pitch to for a very low fee.
Right.
And then I had to change it to say for a small fee. And then I had to change it to say for several dollars. And at this point, I don't even feel like I should tell merchants to start accepting Bitcoin. They should use some cryptocurrency other than Bitcoin. And it absolutely breaks my heart to do that, because until this problem is solved, the truth of the matter is that other cryptocurrencies have more utility than Bitcoin, with the only exception being that Bitcoin has this giant network effect and this giant head start. But that head start is quickly being eroded. And as Daryl mentioned earlier, there's this whole topic of the flippening. And that the idea behind the flippening is, when is Bitcoin no longer going to be the top spot? And we saw as soon as the blocks became full and the fee skyrocketed, and Bitcoin's share of the market in terms of overall market cap nosedived from around 85% to around 35%. And it did that over the course of maybe just a month or two. And it just should be terrifying to any Bitcoin holder. And we hear all these people that are on the other side of the scaling debate from myself. Previously, they all said, oh, all the altcoins, they have, you know, almost no market cap whatsoever. Combined, they're less than 10% of what Bitcoin has. So don't pay any attention to that. And now that the altcoin market caps are, you know, much bigger than Bitcoin combined, now they're saying, oh, well, that's a flawed metric. We shouldn't use that. So they're completely changing their argument. When altcoins had a small market cap, they said, yeah, look, they have a small market cap. We don't need to worry at all. And now that they have a bigger market cap than Bitcoin, they say, oh, well, that doesn't count for whatever made up reason. And as a Bitcoin holder and the owner of Bitcoin.com, no, it does count. And it's horrible. And I think, you know, I was heard Ian talking the other day about how people around Keene, which was one of the first, you know, Bitcoin meccas in the world, and the, you know, one of the meccas for the Liberty community as well, they're starting to use things other than Bitcoin, because if you choose between Bitcoin and a several dollar fee and Dash with a couple of pennies, or right, or Zcash or Ethereum or whatever else is in the Jack's wallet,
right,
people are choosing to use something else. And I'm guessing, Chris, you probably find that at your store as well.
If you have
a customer who wants to pay in crypto, to be honest, you would probably rather they pay in something other than Bitcoin at this point. Is that your feeling?
Yeah, absolutely. I would rather have them do it, but we'll take any crypto that anybody throws at us. But that did drive us to, you know, look more into payment processors that can provide something in addition to just Bitcoin payment processing.
Right. And I think that's really the thing that right now is preventing something else from becoming the crypto of choice. Roger, can you hold on for us?
You got it.
Thank you very much. More with Roger Ver. And of course, your questions are welcome. 855-450-FREE. This is Free Talk Live.
Tired of spending hours hunting down the day's essential political news and views? Let Tom and Steve at Rational Review News Digest do it for you. Visit rationalreview.com for free, hand-curated news, commentary, and audio and video content. Choose from web, social media, and once-daily email editions. We've been the Freedom Movement's daily newspaper since 1991. Come find out why at rationalreview.com.
This is Free Talk Live. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. You can join us, but please, if you call in, have questions for Roger Ver, a.k.a. Bitcoin Jesus. The us in studio tonight is Daryl.
And Heather.
And Chris.
And Chris, you were starting to go down a little bit of a road in the last segment, talking about some of your personal experiences running a small business.
Sure.
And you do accept Bitcoin, but you also accept some other cryptocurrencies.
Sure.
And one thing that sort of separates you from most businesses is that you and your girlfriend are your employees.
And that's how we want to keep it as long as possible.
Right. Which means that if you're accepting Dash or, you know, one of the other altcoins, sure, you could actually, as Roger mentioned, open up your wallet and just accept the payment directly. And
I could.
You could see that. I know, yeah, that there is a POS that allows alternatives to Bitcoin to be accepted. But to really find out that the transaction went through right away, you need full access to the account, which is not something that's ideal if you have people that you are, sure, paying $10 an hour to stand behind the counter and accept funds for you.
Yeah, basically, I mean, as a small business owner, what we'd love to see is the type of integration we have with credit cards. That's where we want to see this happening. You know, the app that I wish, you know, Square. Square is like a very common point of sale system. Yep. Everybody seems to use it. Everybody loves it. But there isn't like a Bitcoin or alt currency or crypto plugin for that that would make it really simple. I think that's one of the challenges that all of the cryptos have moving forward is how do you make it really easy and sort of idiot proof for small businesses to begin to accept Bitcoin or other cryptos. I think BitPay has done it the best so far, in that you get
Bitcoin integration, but they're, right, not allowing alternatives.
Right. They don't have any other choices to do so. When I think of sort of the gold standard of what I want point of sale, if it's not natively integrated into my point of sale system, that's what I want. I want, right, those types of features. Instant feedback, easy to use. That's what I like.
I'm going to play devil's advocate, and Roger, I definitely want your thoughts here, that there's the Bitcoin maximalist, if you will, that would say, well, you could still wind up using your BitPay thing, and if somebody wants to send you Dash or Ether or one of these altcoins, they could just use Shapeshift and convert it to Bitcoin. But doesn't that really sort of defeat the purpose of using these altcoins? Because yet you're not paying the Bitcoin fee per se because you're spending Dash, but that large fee is going to be included in what you wind up sending in Dash. Roger, any thoughts here on, you know, POSs that will implement these altcoins?
Yeah, and we're seeing this happen because it's such a big problem. There used to be almost every Bitcoin company used to use Bitcoin only. And one of the most popular Bitcoin wallets in the U.S. and payment systems or merchant processing systems is one called Coinbase. And, you know, I met the founders of Coinbase before they had raised any money, and it was just, you know, two guys there. And they were, you know, Bitcoin only, and they were Bitcoin only for years and years and years. And then the CEO, Brian Armstrong of Coinbase, voiced his opinion very, very strongly that Bitcoin needs to be allowed to scale so that users can continue to have a good user experience. And the people that are on the other side of this debate that want Bitcoin to just be a settlement network started demonizing him and attacking him and calling him someone who hates Bitcoin when his company has, you know, done more to spread Bitcoin than just about any other company in the world.
Right.
And what happened? Coinbase started integrating a bunch of altcoins. So now they have Ethereum and Litecoin, and they're looking at more and more altcoins all the time. And we've seen that happen here with BitPay as well. BitPay, for the entire time, has been Bitcoin only. And just a couple of days ago, they announced that they're looking at integrating altcoins. And none of these businesses had any interest whatsoever in integrating altcoins until the Bitcoin network became full. And
right,
it's the same. Even Bitcoin.com, with the network being so full, we're now looking at integrating altcoins and using them for payments because the network, the Bitcoin network, has been so full and provided such a horrible user experience. So if Bitcoin.com is considering integrating altcoins, that should tell every person on the planet that there's a big, big, big problem with the usability of Bitcoin. And one whole side of this argument doesn't seem to want to solve this problem. They claim that these high fees and slow confirmation times are a good thing for Bitcoin. But a reoccurring theme that I've noticed when I talk to these people – I ask them, how often do you use Bitcoin in your own life? And usually they say that they hardly use it at all, whereas everybody who uses Bitcoin on a regular basis knows that there's a huge problem.
Right. I'll tell you, when I talk to people about Bitcoin and other cryptos, I always get these same things. Well, isn't, you know, Ethereum, isn't that the Bitcoin killer? Isn't that taking the role of Bitcoin? Isn't it going to do it better? To me, and maybe this is just how I think different coins are shaping up to have their own qualities that are going to lend them to certain areas. So Ether, you know, Ethereum, I think of as the, you know, the decentralized autonomous organization platform, the app platform, things that you can build on it.
The smart dumb contract platform.
Yeah, whatever you want to call it. I do think of Bitcoin as money. I think of, you know, things like Monero or Dash as money. I think of things like Ripple as something that would be used to do large scale transactions.
You know, I don't really across. Think about Ripple.
I know you don't. but I do because I own a little bit of it. And another coin I'm kind of excited about is Siacoin or Siacoin, S-I-A.
Yeah, I've heard you mention this, but I've not heard anybody else talk about it. Roger, is this one you're familiar with?
No, I'd love to hear more because all the other ones he mentioned I'm well aware of. But tell me about Siacoin. I would love to hear more.
I think it's probably around 2025 in the top coins. What they do is storage. It's sort of like a storage coin, and the idea is that you can lease out your free hard drive space on your computer or in your data center or wherever it happens to be, and you will receive Siacoin for that. So it's literally kind of taking on the Amazon.
And if you go Google to the data centers, I'm on the website right now, it's SIA.tech. And they actually say at, you know, the top of the website, your decentralized private cloud. So they are admitting to what they are.
Yeah. Yeah. They're very clear about it. And it's also trustless, meaning that they have no control over any of the data storage whatsoever. The compelling thing with this particular coin to me is it's low cost. It's storage at about 2 terabytes. And they're already in talks with HP to actually develop some hardware which would act as a front end to this thing. And I just think that's interesting. And so when I think of storage, I'm going to be thinking of this and blockchain technology that enables this type of thing. So I guess if I have a question, Roger, is it at what point do we stop comparing coins that really do completely different things? And when do we collectively start to say, this is a really good cash coin, this is a really good computing coin like Gollum, this is a really good storage coin? Are we going to get there? Or is it just everybody just considers all these things variants of Bitcoin, really?
Well, I think that almost all of them are based on the original technology of Bitcoin. But it's worth pointing out, though, also that Vitalik Buterin, the inventor of Ethereum, he wanted to build Ethereum on top of Bitcoin, and it could have been built on top of Bitcoin. But these same people that are on the other side of the scaling debate for myself basically said, no way, no how, we're not going to let you do it. So he went off to go and build Ethereum on its own rather than on top of Bitcoin. And there's so many applications that people wanted to build on top of Bitcoin, these colored coin applications and counterparty and these a lot of amazing things,
right,
that the fees have killed. And it drives me nuts when I hear people saying that it's a good thing that Bitcoin is, you know, the blockchain.
I have a question.
All right, Roger, we'll hold you over for one more segment, if that's all right.
You got it.
More with Roger Ver here on Free Talk Live. And your thoughts, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. This is Free Talk Live. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. If you're calling in on Skype because you want to ask Roger Ver a question, you need to call in to 855-450-FREE because Roger is on Skype and we can't have two people on at once without totally messing something up. We'll get back to, I know that Heather, you had a question, mm-hmm, for Roger. We'll get into that in just a second. But before we do, I want to make sure that I tell you about a way that not only can you use your Bitcoin, but you can also save on things that you're going to purchase. And you can do that when you go to saveatpurse.com. That's saveatpurse.com. I placed an order earlier today for some coconut-infused beverage, and non-alcoholic beverage. And within like an hour and a half, the order got picked up, saving 15%. And I just got notification that the order has shipped and is estimated to be here on Saturday. And again, I'm saving 15% on this. And I did that because I went to saveatpurse.com. So what you do if you want these bigger savings is you put things in an Amazon wish list. You then import the wish list into your account there at saveatpurse.com. You then fund the account with Bitcoin or altcoins if you use the Shapeshift integration. And then it's not always as fast as what this was, but you know, sometimes within hours or a day or two, your order does get picked up. You receive the products. The person that wound up buying the products for you, they get Bitcoin, and everybody winds up being happy. Saveatpurse.com.
Okay, so now to my question, Roger. And I want to also thank you for calling in today because you've kind of enlightened me to a lot of different stuff today. So my question for you, though, is you keep bringing up these fees and how much, you know, they disappoint you. And I still can't figure out who's setting these fees. If, like, nobody really runs Bitcoin and there's everybody has their own Bitcoin, everybody has different wallets and stuff, like, where are these fees coming from?
Roger?
Oh, did we lose him?
No, nope, I'm sorry. I had myself muted during
the story. Okay.
I'm sorry if
I got so disappointed because this is a really mind-boggling question for me.
So Bitcoin is capitalism in action. And what's going on here and where the fees are coming from is that there's 1 megabyte worth of block space being produced on average every 10 minutes. And imagine that 1 megabyte is a football stadium, and the football stadium has 10,000 seats. The people that are willing to pay the most get those 10,000 seats. And the same thing's happening with this block space within Bitcoin. Whoever's willing to pay the most are the ones that get space within those blocks of Bitcoin transactions. So initially, the blocks were never even remotely close to being full. And so miners were willing to include your transaction for, you know, a fraction of a penny. They didn't care because there was plenty of extra room there.
And I remember a couple years ago being able to send transactions with no fee.
Right, and that was common up until maybe late 2012 or early 2013. If the coins had been sitting at an address long enough, there was no fee whatsoever, and it was only coins that had moved recently would require any fee at all, and that was just to prevent people from spamming the network by shuffling around the same coins over and over.
Right.
But today, so many people want to use Bitcoin that it's more than 1 megabyte worth of transactions every 10 minutes, so everybody has to bid against each other. And initially, the bidding was where if you paid – you know, 3 cents, you were high enough to get included, and then it took 5 cents, and then 10 cents, and then 50 cents, and now it's up to several dollars. And a couple of days ago, it dropped down a bit again. And I think there's probably a couple of reasons, one of which is probably the big holiday that just finished in the U.S. with the 4th of July. Tons and tons of businesses are using Bitcoin, and on the 4th of July holiday, those businesses aren't doing their thing. So I think that there were less transactions on the Bitcoin network because of that. A bunch of additional mining power has come on the network recently. So instead of the blocks being spaced at about 10 minutes apart, they're spaced at about 8 minutes apart at the moment. So there's, you know, much more block space being produced. And so those things have come together to drive the fees down. And part of it's probably because people have started using things other than Bitcoin. I think it's all of those things together. And we'll see what happens with the fees here. But it's just so frustrating when Bitcoin could have been so useful to where people wouldn't even consider using altcoins. And Purse, you know, saveatpurse.com, Purse is one of my very favorite websites and things to tell people about why they should use Bitcoin. And who doesn't want to save 15% on all their purchases from Amazon? And Purse used to only accept Bitcoin. And then recently, because of all these troubles with the Bitcoin network being congested, they've started accepting altcoins. And they're not the only one. There's more and more and more. And at this point, it's probably a rarity if a company is only accepting Bitcoin. More and more companies are starting to accept all sorts of crypto coins. And The ones that only accept Bitcoin are the holdouts at this point, which is really sad, and it didn't have to be that way, but that's where we're at this point. And
what do you think could have happened to what could have been done differently to prevent this capitalism issue?
Well, it's capitalism in the sense that people bid for their space, but there's an artificially imposed production limit or a quota on the amount of block space that can be produced. And the simple answer is get rid of this artificial quota or artificial capital.
That quota was not originally part of Satoshi's vision.
Right. And this could have been resolved years ago.
But can't they just decide to get rid of that limit? I mean,
that's where the argument has been for a couple of years now, and that's why this SegWit2x proposal or consensus agreement wound up being agreed to a couple of weeks ago. And Roger, a couple final questions. The August 1st date we had talked about earlier, because there's this thing called a user-activated soft fork where, from what I've heard, it's only like 1% of Bitcoin users actually support this thing, to where they want to wind up, you know, as people running a full node, and don't want to get into all of the technicals of what that means, but they want to reject Bitcoin blocks that don't have segregated witness. And they're saying that, you know, they are willing to fork off onto their own chain and create, you know, an alternative to Bitcoin that they're going to claim as the real Bitcoin. And then I also heard something recently called a user-activated hard fork, but I don't know the details of that. Is that something you're familiar with, and what is the difference?
So the user-activated soft fork are a bunch of people that just have their own nodes, and I'm not worried about it at all. And if they fork off on their own, great. I don't have to deal with them anymore. And
nice.
But I don't understand why any user of Bitcoin would like or support that. These are the same people that are saying that Bitcoin should have high fees and should be slow to use and inconvenient, basically. They're arguing that Bitcoin should be inconvenient. Well, if it's inconvenient, guess what? People are going to use something else. So I'm really at a loss for why these people think that that's a good idea, and most of them don't seem to actually use Bitcoin themselves. The user-activated hard fork, I think, would be great, to be honest, if it had enough of the ecosystem going with it. The reason this civil war has been so vicious and time-consuming and, you know, so many people are involved is because of this really, really strong network effect where everybody wants to be using the same network or same type of money as everybody else.
Right.
And we'll see what happens, but I'm not really worried about the user-activated soft fork. And if they fork themselves off, you know, great. If they get the version of Bitcoin that they want, and the rest of us hopefully can have the version of Bitcoin that we want. And maybe that's the best thing at this point, is just to stop the fighting and let everybody go their separate ways, and then people can decide which version of Bitcoin is the most useful in their life, and life will go on.
I want the Bitcoin where fees are fractions of a penny, and I can use it basically wherever I want.
Well, that to me is the true beauty of blockchain, that it is more or less open. Most of them are open source, that anybody really, if they've got a good idea and they've got some programming chops, can come up with an idea to improve how we transact, improve how we compute, improve how we program, all these things, and to have it be distributed and, you know, unable to be edited and unable for governments to really get in there and cheat the system. It's what intrigued me, you know, in 2012, 2013, when I first got exposed to it, and it's what still intrigues me today.
Roger, any final thoughts? We got about a minute left.
Yeah, for people that haven't used any form of cryptocurrency, get started with it. And it gives you the ability to send and receive money with anyone, anywhere in the world, basically for free, depending on which cryptocurrency you use. And it's censorship resistant. That means the IRS can't come in and seize your funds. You don't need permission from a bank. You don't need permission from a corporation. You don't need permission from me or anybody else to use this. And every person on the entire planet has access to this. So if you think people should be in charge of their own money and we don't need to use, you know, these pieces of paper with dead politicians printed on them anymore, get involved with cryptocurrency today. Bitcoin.com, of course, is a fantastic website to get started on that. Jax is a fantastic wallet. I use Jax myself because it has
JAXX.io. Roger, thank you
very much for
coming on, and definitely check his work out, bitcoin.com. More And your calls and thoughts welcome. 855-450-FREE. This is Free Talk Live.
You have probably heard about Bitcoin and virtual currencies, but you don't really know what to do next. Maybe you feel like they have already passed you by. Nothing could be further from the truth. Bitcoin is an emergent technology still. It is still in beta and sweeping the globe. All the information you need to learn about Bitcoin is at Bitcoin.com. Go to your browser, type in Bitcoin.com, choose a wallet program, get Bitcoins, and then spend Bitcoins. Bitcoin.com, the only site you need to know for virtual currencies. Bitcoin.com.
Free Talk Live.
This is Free Talk Live. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. Kicking off hour number two in studio, it's Daryl.
And Heather.
And Chris.
And let's go to the phones, actually. Back to Skype, where we've got Stefan calling in from Ohio. Stefan, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead with your thoughts.
Hey, guys. How are you tonight?
Good.
Doing well. What's on your mind?
I'd like to discuss the potential future of both the Libertarian Party and the Libertarian movement.
Oh, this
I'm
is
sure,
going to be great.
I'm sure both Daryl and I'm not sure about you guys, have been seeing what's happening in the Libertarian Party, especially within the past 10 years at the national level. Mm-hmm. And even in Alaska, where the Libertarian fronted a horrible candidate despite getting second place, he was basically a Republican in Libertarian clothing. What I was concerned about is, do you think this is the similar route that the Reform Party took, where, you know, Pat Buchanan and his goons came into the party and ripped it away from what it was supposed to be? Do you think that's a potential for what's happening now, especially with people like Gary Johnson and Bob Barr and Derek Michael Reed?
Well, let me first sort of explain a little bit about what the Reform Party was and how it is totally different from the Libertarian Party. The Reform Party did not have an underlying philosophy that it was built upon other than we're not the Republicans and Democrats. Like, that was their underlying philosophy.
Well, when I think of the Libertarian Party or libertarianism in general compared to conservatism or progressivism, it really is the only philosophy driving a political party. You know what I
Correct.
Mean? What's the philosophy of conservatism? And conservatives will have a hard time. Well, you know, we all like smaller government. No, but really, what?
Well, what I was always told growing up is conservatives support traditional values.
Right.
But yet they never could define what traditional values were.
Right.
So, you know, the Republican Party's underlying philosophy is we're not Democrats, and we oppose all the things that they support unless it helps us stay in power.
And here's where I get frustrated with, albeit a lot of my friends. You know, I've had friends for years, and then suddenly, you know, I'll see
good
on their
friends.
It is good to have friends, but I'll see on their Facebook change. You know, it's like they change their status, you know, to it's complicated. They'll change, you know, their political leanings are now, or, you know, I'm now a libertarian. I'm like, while I appreciate that, I think for many people, their sole understanding of libertarian, the word, is I'm tired of Democrats and I'm tired of Republicans, therefore I must be libertarian.
That's what I was going to bring up. My mom has for a long time claimed I am a libertarian.
Right.
But I showed her the libertarian debate on C-SPAN, and believe it or not, the only one she liked at all was Gary Johnson.
How can you not like Gary, though? Come on.
He's like, a likable guy.
You know what? For me, like, my whole thing, right, and I think a lot of libertarians that are contemplating running for any type of legislative office fails to realize, right, that in order to get anything done, right, because we're all about the individual and individual rights and stuff, but when it comes to politics, you have to be able to work with people. If you're one of those people that I'm an individual, just because you can't get along with anybody else, then you're not going to fare well in politics. That's just how it is. And there's a reason I don't like working with some libertarians, is because they have that mentality where, you know, if you disagree with me on 1 out of 10 things, they focus on that one.
Oh, you'd hate to work with
Ron Paul.
Depends
on the principle.
It doesn't matter, like, principles. Like, I mean, like...
What?
Yeah, exactly. So okay, you would absolutely hate to have to work with Ron Paul.
No, I like Ron Paul. I'm all for principles, but principles alone are not changing the world. Like, we can all sit here and be like, hey.
So let's talk about Ron Paul, because Ron Paul, if even people that don't like Ron Paul will go, you know what? At least he was consistent. He didn't really vary his positions on war, on fiscal matters, on banking, on currency, on civil or on natural rights or anything like that the entire time. As a result, he really didn't accomplish much. Stefan, would you agree with that?
He accomplished nothing because nobody was willing to embrace his principles. I mean, these are the major two parties.
He didn't do anything legislatively.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that.
I think looking back, I think we could all recognize that Ron Paul had a tremendous impact on our country, which is why I think a lot of us are even using the word libertarian right now.
No, but yeah. But I think that, you know, in terms of principles, like, when it comes to running for elections and stuff like that, like, yeah, you could be this principled person, but you have to have a little pragmatism or whatever the word is in order to work with people to get stuff done, right? Because you can't just run on principles and shove your principles down people's throats saying you're a bad person if you don't do this or that. Or, you know, because everybody believes that what they're doing is the right thing.
It was what you had said about, well, they disagree with 1 out of 10 things, therefore they can't be welcome. It depends on what they disagree with. You know, it's similar to what we had in the last libertarian primary. Austin Peterson was fairly good around, but he had some non-libertarian principles such as being pro-life, which I think pretty much disqualifies you from being a libertarian.
I think the thing that disqualifies Austin Peterson from being a libertarian is his statements that he rejects the non-aggression principle, which is the underlying basis for libertarianism.
Okay, see, my whole thing, like, on principles, right? Like, principles are great, right?
No.
Like,
okay,
no, they are.
Go ahead,
okay.
Finish your thought. Then I can't wait to go ahead. Principles are great, but
no, but I'm saying, right? Like, for me, my principles are like, I care about other human beings. I care about people, right? So I always want to do what I feel like is in the best interests of, like, humanity, right? So that said, everything that I've learned over the years has constantly been changing. Like, you know, I used to think, oh, you know, like, we're going to go fight these bad guys in Iraq and whatever. Like, I was sold all of that.
Sure.
Right? So I've basically eaten so much humble pie to get to where I am today that I haven't I've acquired a taste for it, right? So I don't ever hold any of my views, not anarchy, not whatever it is. Like, I don't hold anything. Like, okay, for all I know, right? Like, let's say we abolish the federal government. I really have no idea what the hell is going to happen.
And, I don't think any of us
but
do.
What I'm saying is I consider things, right? No, okay, but this is what I value in candidates, right? Is humility. That's what I value. And that's one thing I liked about Gary Johnson. He might not have been the perfect libertarian, but one thing that he said was, you know, when he got booed for mentioning the fair tax, right? Like, he doesn't completely understand where the rest of us all are on anarchy. Maybe he does. Maybe he just wants to take a slower approach to get there to avoid any catastrophic things that could cause unintended consequences for good people. Like,
but implementing,
and I think that's
a national welfare system,
you know,
that every man, woman, and child goes on to is also going to have unintended consequences.
No, but right now, that welfare system exists, okay?
The
and I
fair
don't
tax
think
does
it makes somebody a bad
right
person.
Right.
Yeah, but, okay, Gary's exact words was, if that didn't work, then we can try something else. And you know what, for me, I appreciate that. Like, right now, government exists, and there's people that depend on government to sustain their life. Whether or not you agree with, you know, that, I'm one of those people that, yes, I agree in smaller government, but let's do it in a way that's not going to, like, cause, you know, chaos. We can't just eliminate all government tomorrow, because guess what? Then all the people, like, it would just be, like, it's just not even possible. Like, yeah, exactly. Like, let's do it slow. Like, a doctor's not going to be like, oh, hey, you have a tumor. Let's just hack your freaking head open and grab that crap and, you know,
what
whatever.
I noticed,
like,
I'm sorry, but I have to say what confuses me about incrementalism is whenever it is tried, typically they get halfway there and then they figure, well, that's good enough. We're better than where we were before. That's why I don't necessarily agree with incrementalism.
Well, because you have a world of 7 billion people and the battle of information and the arena of ideas is just never ending. I mean, to get, you know, the one thing issue I have with anarchy is being like, oh, this is going to be the peace of it all, is how do you get 700 million people to agree on what the standards of ethics should be so that not one single person is oppressed?
I personally believe people want to do the right thing. People are naturally good.
Stefan, thank you for the call. Your calls and thoughts, welcome. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. This is Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. Your calls and thoughts welcome about whatever is on your mind. The future of the libertarian movement, incrementalism, government itself. Do principles even matter?
Yes, they do. And stop trying to act like I'm not principled, okay? Like, I haven't heard anybody.
Nobody said that.
I haven't heard anybody. I am a very principled person. I'm just one of those people that I'm like, I don't want to make, you know, like, I care about people. So I don't want to, like, put out there a suggestion that could potentially, you know, turn America into some worse off country, you know. Like, I'm grateful right now that we have the opportunity to sit here like this and talk and walk into a supermarket and buy food. Like, these are all things I don't take for granted.
And to buy food, you need money, but you don't need money to do business on Simbi.com. It's a slick, easy to use marketplace where you trade your talents for other people's services and abilities. You can forget the old economy. This is your economy. Simbi.com. Simbi.com. You won't believe the diversity of services listed on Simbi. There are hundreds of thousands of people acting within the symbiotic economy. Go get an account at Simbi.com and take a look around and post your services. Simbi.com. Simbi.com. So there is a question off the air about, do we want to go closer to Venezuela or closer to where the country was 230 some odd years ago?
But I think we're here where we are now, right? Let's discuss ideas. I was going to approve, and you said the country, right? So when we identify as a country, right? So we're limiting our scope of, okay, we care about the people in this general country.
Well, I care about people all over the world.
I do too.
But you know, I think, like, I cannot personally influence the political stuff going on in Nicaragua.
Sure. But I think for this conversation, let's just say we're talking about the United States of America. And Heather's statement was she doesn't want to see us become Venezuela. And I agree with you completely on that. What my point is where we have allowed ourselves to come over the last 250 years is much further from 1789. We have, if there were a scale of liberty and freedom and 1789, we're at one end of the spectrum and Venezuela is at the other end. I would say that we're on the Venezuela side of middle,
yep.
That we are a much more socialist oligarchy. We are no longer a republic. We have a very small group of very powerful people that control most of what occurs in our country. Mm-hmm. More and more of our economic system is controlled by banks and Wall Street than it is by people.
I could, you know, get into a big long debate about whether or not, you know, quote unquote, we are a republic, because there are a lot of republics where, well, quite frankly, they're communist run. The
sure
People's Republic of China is a republic, and they have a constitution, which means they're a constitutional republic.
Okay, so when I
so
talk in terms of
don't mean what a lot of people want them to mean.
Agreed. But I'm gonna say that when I talk about a republic, a federal republic, I'm referring to how things were set up in 1789. So that's sort of my baseline. You had a government that was very limited by its constitution, and at least for a couple weeks, they obeyed it.
Yep. Was the average American's purchasing power better back then, though, would you say, as like an individual?
Well, back then, we fluctuated between paper currency and gold as the preferred. And it wasn't just our
and
gold.
And a lot of barter.
Yeah, there was some barter, but you could also use Spanish doubloons and things like that.
Right.
For currency. So much more of the currency was either based on gold, silver, or foreign coin.
Right. And there was not something called legal tender, where the federal government said, this is what you must accept.
I'll tell you.
That wound up being implemented during Lincoln's tenure as president, where he had the Treasury issue notes so that he could inflate the currency to pay for his war. Let's go to the phones, and we can definitely continue this. We've got Andrew calling in from Arizona, listening to the call-in line. Andrew, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead with your thoughts.
All right, thanks. Yeah, I just wanted to kind of comment on the people being inherently good. I mean, maybe when they are babies, you're a baby, inherently good. But clearly the state is attracting psychopaths, sociopaths, people who are clearly out to harm others, steal, and in their mind, maybe they are doing good. Maybe they're sincere psychopaths, which maybe that's the definition of a psychopath. They are sincere in what they do, but being good, no, stealing is still not good. So to ratchet it down incrementally to small stealing, it doesn't make it good, but I understand where she's coming from, that being a welfare state or a fascist state that we live in, it's hard to cut it all at once. And I agree. I like that she's realistically trying to debate it instead of a lot of the debates we usually have, which are kind of like the unrealistic view, considering most people believe in that religion of the state.
Right.
Yeah, and, I mean, that's the truth of the matter, right? I've always said that, like, the state is kind of like a manifestation of the psyche of the people in that region, right? So you're going to have the kind of government that reflects the psyche of the people. If you have a very submissive group of people, you're going to have a very dominant government. If you have a very brave and alpha-oriented psyche of the people, you're going to have a government that's being run more by the people and the will of the people. And right now, I think it's the population of America. We have a lot of people that are complaining about government, not doing much about it, not putting their money where their mouth is, not getting out to vote. I mean, look how many people don't show out to vote, don't speak their mind, don't attend protests, until, some... Something stupid like a Sony Seth Rogen movie, right? Got a bunch of people outraged about that and in the streets. And I don't know. It just seems like a lot of people are using the right to protest for the dumbest things these days. And
they do.
I don't know.
Yeah. No, I understand what you're saying. I understand where you're going. And there always has to be a level of pragmatism. My take on incrementalism isn't let's shave off part of the federal government. I would rather see these experiments take place in small locales with small numbers of people and then grow from them. If ideas are good, they will expand. I also don't disagree at all with the caller that, yes, as long as you provide positions of power, then psychopathic personalities will pursue them.
Right. And there are even studies that show that even if people aren't seeking power, but they are given a position of power, they will turn into a petty little tyrant.
Sure.
The Stanford Prison Experiment probably the best example of that. And then you've got the Milgram experiments, to where people will just, whatever the guy in the lab coat says, because the experiment requires you to continue.
He's got a lab coat on for
He's got a lab coat.
The one where they were shocking him, and he's like, no.
Andrew, hold the line. Not sure if you had more. Your calls and thoughts, welcome. 855-450-FREE. What are your thoughts on psychopaths? Are they attracted to power, or does power just create them? This is Free Talk Live, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733.
Do you want to help build a better financial system for everyone? Join Dash. Dash is digital cash. a digital money platform designed to replace cash and help people manage their own wealth. It's fast and easy. Fees are low and transactions are confirmed instantly. Dash is decentralized, run by users who earn rewards for helping run the network and make governance decisions. Help people take control over their financial future today. Find out more at dash.org.
This is Free Talk Live. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. In studio, it's Daryl.
And Heather.
And Chris.
And we've been talking about incrementalism, the future of the libertarian movement, and that the U.S. government is a lot closer to Venezuela than it is to, you know, what the country was supposed to have been in 1789 when the U.S. Constitution wound up being ratified, which means that, you know, we're not North Korea yet. And there's actually a story about North Korea where, you know, every now and then something not horrible happens to somebody in North Korea. This time it's actually a North Korean soldier who found his way out of North Korea. Story comes from UPI, North Korean soldier, unnamed North Korean soldier, who was part of Kim Jong-un's bodyguard, has defected from the country, wants to get to South Korea, currently in China. Peter Chung, who's the head of Justice for North Korea, which is an activist group in South Korea, said the North Korean defector escaped by crossing the Chinese border on June 10th. The soldier, who was 17 years old and new to his occupation, decided to cross the Yalu River last month. He was training in the North Pyongan province. The North Korean teen had been selected to join a special security unit and was assigned to guard a luxury compound belonging to Kim Jong-un. Chung, again from the group Justice for North Korea, said the soldier appeared to have some knowledge of South Korean culture and society before he entered military service, adding that he decided to leave North Korea owing to his dissatisfaction with the North Korean regime. He had expressed interest in defecting to the South, but is currently in a safe house in China. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that he is safe.
No kidding.
Because the Chinese government does not recognize North Koreans as refugees and often forcibly repatriates defectors. He should soon arrive in South Korea. And there are other North Korean soldiers that have also done the same thing. Couple of them defecting to the South. Primary reason given, the lack of food being supplied to the Army.
Wow. Not the people, but to the Army, because that's right, where they're at. Yeah.
These are soldiers, and when you don't feed your soldiers, and this has been one of the questions that has often been asked on this show about Venezuela, because we had mentioned Venezuela. It's a socialist paradise where you stand in lines for long periods of time hoping to be able to buy some food, and then when you get into the store you find that the shelves are empty. And this is one of the questions that's been asked about Venezuela, is what is going to happen when the members of the military that are protecting the leaders stop getting fed?
Right. And that's caused collapses before in other countries. I mean, that's his last line of defense.
Right. And in some countries, you know, the military has wound up having a coup where they overthrow the quote unquote duly elected leader. But when you have no food, that means you have no energy to throw a coup.
Right.
So
this is where I get like stuck on the whole like world peace thing, you know what I mean? Like once you start cutting people off from food, people revert back to their like animalistic primitive ways, you know? I mean, it's just the reality of it. And I don't, you know, the non-aggression principle comes up in the libertarian talk world or whatever all the time, and I'm kind of like one of those people. I feel like a lot of people take this hippie approach, like, oh yeah, you know, if there's like one piece of food left, we're supposed to just sit around and hold hands saying kumbaya and not like try to fight for it. But
well, a lot of times
at the end of the day, I think the last thing I was going to say is just I think when it comes to violence, my theory as a mom, right, is like, is it not my job to protect my daughter and to keep her healthy and to keep her alive as long as possible, right? Like, I think I set an expectation, like, look, I'm not going to kill you or your family for any reason that I wouldn't expect you to kill me under the same circumstances. Like, I'm not going to kill you for fun. I'm not going to kill you because you said something that upset me and hurt my feelings. But if it came down to survival of the fittest, like, let's go.
Right. The issue with the socialist countries and yep. attempts in the past is government is killing their families. Right. Government kills through starvation.
That's where I wonder, is government kind of like when people agree like to this whole nationalism thing, right? And say, well,
I don't
all...
agree to nationalism. Yeah.
Okay, fine, you don't, but people? I'm saying, right?
Who are these people?
Is the reason that we have families and stuff, like we all protect each other, right? We all protect our families. They're higher up on our priority list than, let's say, the people on the other side of the country. Like, we take care of our own first. So do people in nationalism and the identifying as a nation, is that basically people looking to increase their tribe in order to preserve their own existence?
No. To me, it's just socialism under a different guise. You can call it nationalism. You can call it whatever you want, but nationalist movements often parallel socialist movements. So in the end, when you say that I'm going to take care of all of you, at some point that means I'm going to make some decisions about how resources, scarce resources, are going to get allocated. And that means, because I'm in power, I have to take care of the people that are immediately around me and protecting me. So that means my military is going to get fed.
But you can have nationalism without the government part of it.
No. No, you can't have nationalism without government. Nationalism is like worship of government. Nationalism isn't worship of a acre of land or a thousand acres or anything
else. We're all Americans, but we don't need the federal government.
And for what does for 99.999% of people, that means when we talk about American, we talk about our system of government, our form of government. What they're actually saying is our government. Right. That's the issue, and whether people want to admit that or not, you know,
yeah,
that's...
Are human beings, like, as a species collectivist, like wolves and, like, other animals? Like, is this just something that we're not going to be able to evolve
from? I think we're kind of pack animals. I think we're happier when we're together, but that doesn't
when
mean...
When the packs grow, you end up getting government.
You get some form of organization, but there have been examples in history, and it's the ancient Scots
say,
or something like that.
The anarchist community seemed
Irish.
To be the most
was
unorganized.
Was it the Irish, where it was each village really had no specific leader? They sort of had a council that made a couple decisions, and then all those guys got together at a higher level, and this thing went on for like 700 years?
But see, that's the thing, is I feel like a lot of anarchists, like the anarchist community seems to be the most unorganized. I mean, it's like, it's so hard to find people like Daryl or like Ian that are actually lobbying and doing stuff. Most people are anarchist in name only, you know what I mean? They're not doers, they're just talkers.
You can apply the same thing to Democrats and Republicans. There's a heck of a lot more Democrats out there that bitch and complain all the time and never do anything. And there's a whole bunch more Republicans that just complain.
There's this thing called the 80-20
rule. Right.
That 80% of the work is done by 20% of the people.
And that's going to be regardless of what stripe.
I feel like in the anarchy community, it's like 2% of the people.
You get that feeling sometimes, but sometimes they are doing their part. Maybe they're practicing agorism, or you know, maybe they're resisting the federal government in some way that it's not very visible.
The behind-the-scenes people as well.
Sure.
Yeah.
There was a podcast I was listening to recently where somebody that's, you know, like some big YouTube celebrity apparently was talking about how big her team is, to where, you know, you watch this video of this one person in front of the camera and you don't realize that there's 10 people involved in making that video.
Right, right.
And the same way with a lot of activist sort of stuff, you don't necessarily see all of the behind the scenes people. You don't see all of the volunteers in various organizations.
And even here in New Hampshire, I mean, because that's what we're most closely exposed to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just look at one organization like the New Hampshire Liberty Alliance.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of people that in our state actually read the bills that are being proposed, and they rate them on not on, you know, some arbitrary scale, but how it affects liberty. Is it pro-liberty? Right. Is it against liberty? And they put together papers and they distributed them to lawmakers, the gold standard.
Right.
That's a great example. But there are dozens, Daryl, of people
probably
that are involved in that.
Yeah.
But I never run into them and they don't make headlines. but they're all working on it. You know, one of my neighbors reviews bills for them.
855-450-FREE. That's the toll-free call-in line. You can join us. This is Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733 in studio tonight. It's Daryl.
And Heather.
And Chris.
And we're talking about nationalism and North Korean defectors and what happens when you stop feeding your military. Well, I'll tell you, not good things. They wind up crossing rivers to get out of the country in hopes of finding something better. And speaking of something better, how about a better financial system? Well, join Dash. Dash is digital cash. It's a digital money platform designed to replace cash and help people manage their own wealth. It's fast, private, and easy. Fees are low and transactions are fast and in some cases can even be confirmed instantly. You can pay anyone, anywhere in the world, anytime for just pennies. Dash is decentralized, run by users who earn rewards for helping run the network and making governance decisions. Anyone can invest in Dash and earn rewards for helping run the network. Join Dash and help create a better financial system for everyone. Take back control over your financial future today. Find out more at dash.org. There's a lot of momentum behind Dash, so go right now to dash.org and find out why. Let's go to Skype, where we've got Kieran calling in. Kieran, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead with your thoughts.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I heard in the last segment you guys were talking about nationalism, and I wanted to talk a little bit about nationalism, especially in the context of the libertarian movement. I'm sure, as has been discussed on the show, and as you guys know, like, there's a big issue with nationalism, I believe, within the libertarian movement, especially coming from these alt-right fakertarian infiltrators that are calling themselves libertarians and kind of hijacking the movement and, I believe, soiling our name and what we stand for. And a lot of these people have this obsession with Augusto Pinochet, former dictator of Chile, as well as the libertarian philosopher and scholar Hans Hermann Hoppe. And he had this philosophy that a libertarian state could not exist without the forced physical removal of leftists, that it's the responsibility of, I assume, the state, because he doesn't really seem to make it clear in his work, The God That Failed, because he claims to be an anarchist. But
physically remove people that don't agree with us. That doesn't sound statist at all.
Yeah, right?
And he calls himself a libertarian?
Yeah, I mean, he does. I mean, he considers himself a libertarian, but
Jews out of here, right?
Yeah. I was listening to the Napster podcast, and the Napster made a good point, is that Hans Hermann Hoppe, and this is kind of going back to what you said, Chris, about how nationalism is, in one degree or another, socialism, because nationalism is about collectivism. Well, Hans Hermann Hoppe was educated in Frankfurt in Germany, which is literally like the scholarly center of leftist Marxist socialist thinking.
Sure.
You know? And it seems to have come through in his philosophy that, you know, we can't have a libertarian state without, you know, removing everybody who disagrees with you, which is kind of what.
But I don't think he wants to remove everybody that disagrees, only the people that he sees as quote unquote leftist.
Right.
My understanding of Hoppe's philosophy is he's completely okay with the social conservatives that want to control what you do in your bedroom.
Wait, what's his name?
Hans Hermann Hoppe. H-O-P-P-E.
Then he needs to make the Hoppe party, and then he can decide who can be in his little party, okay? But, when you're part of the Libertarian Party, you got to compromise, you got to work with people.
I don't think he's a member of the LP.
Okay, well, he can have his own little Hoppe party.
But interestingly, he is a member of, you know, he's a recognized fellow at the Mises Institute, which is arguably a pretty big libertarian.
Arguably.
Unfortunately, some libertarian people think tank can't work in groups.
Yeah, Hoppe, he's a complicated guy, because I think he was kind of started as a real Rothbardian. I mean, he was very close to Rothbard, and I think he just sort of took those ideas to an extreme. You know what I mean? If you take the core ideas of anarcho-capitalism, which is where I think Hopper really started out, it's just sort of became this thought game to, okay, well, if we did this, what would the next step be, and so on and so on. So he's an interesting guy. It concerns me, too. I guess that's what I'm saying. I think that you can take any idea, and if you keep on with it to its most extreme point, it becomes something that is not positive anymore.
And I think one problem that some people within the, you know, quote-unquote libertarian movement have is basically hero worship. Now, they're not going to call it that, but I can't tell you the number of people that I've heard say, well, Rothbard said blah, 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 so therefore, it must be. Well, no.
Yeah.
Just because Rothbard said something, or just because Spooner said something, or just because Bastiat said something, or just because Hoppe said something, or just because Daryl said something, doesn't mean anything other than somebody said something.
Yeah, we all put on our pants the same way, so.
Yeah,
I don't think we do, because I've intentionally put both of my feet through the holes and pulled them up just so I can say that I've put my pants on two legs at a time.
Oh, there you go.
I'm a contrarian. What I do.
You are a contrarian. I do agree with that. And it's easy to find. If you find that one guy and maybe he's somewhat scholarly and he's written some books and you feel that you can use his words in a certain way to further your point of view, then
so
people tend to jump on it. And
I tend to
it
have,
is a shame.
Like, I have people that I kind of keep as like my library of people whose opinions I value. You know what I mean? Like, in different fields, I have a few friends that, like, I have a friend that's an economics professor for like 20 something years. He's written like 5 books. So when I have like questions about economics and stuff and like, oh, what would happen if this, like, I generally tend to seek out opinions from people that I value, that have spent more time critically, you know what I mean, like microscope time on these areas of philosophy or whatever, you know what I mean? That's kind of how I...
Well, it's a good starting point, and there are a lot of very interesting thinkers, I think, in the libertarian heritage. And and like you said, you have to look at the totality of their work. You have to realize what makes sense to you, because that's really all that it comes down to.
Don't believe the people that have that standing on a platform, this is how everything is. Those are the people I'm least likely to take seriously.
Kieran?
I was going to say, I mean, I understand, you know, hero worship, talking about individual philosophers and their impacts on people, but I think the bigger issue here is the message. And I don't think it's necessarily about Hoppe, is that people are using the works of Hoppe, especially The God That Failed, to kind of justify their idea of immigration control, which is a huge issue right now. And it's something that's really causing a schism. That's one of the main splitting issues within the party, within the movement, whatever you want to call it, among libertarians in general, is open versus closed borders.
The people that
have always set
them
on the wall.
By and large, the people that are supporting, you know, so-called closed borders will cite Hoppe to give their xenophobia some form of legitimacy.
That's a good point.
And then other people say, well, some really famous guy allegedly said this thing, so therefore it must be true. And that was my point about the whole hero worship thing, is when people use other people to justify their own position and then convince people to agree with their horrible position because, well, somebody else said it too.
Right. Yeah. All I can say is I read one book of Hoppe's. It's been several years ago, and I don't even recall which one it was. I've met the guy a couple times. He's very charming. He's a nice guy.
He probably is.
But again, I just can't speak too much.
You only say he's nice because he didn't physically remove you from the smoking area.
I was not thrown out of a helicopter.
You weren't wearing your leftist badge.
but there's a lot of people. I guess if If you have been so convinced that Hoppe has all the answers, then I would encourage anybody to go read Rothbard and read Mises and read...
Read Bastiat.
Read Bastiat, yeah, yeah. Great,
read
great example.
Mary Ruart.
Mary Ruart, excellent choice.
Healing Our World.
Right. There's all...
Amazing book.
All kinds of libertarian philosophy out there.
Though, have you guys ever read books on, like, other things, like communism, this, that, the other thing? You know what I mean? Like, or...
The Manifesto.
Do you know what I mean? Because we tend to naturally read stuff that kind of, like, expands off what we already know. Like, did you ever, like, go into a completely different...
I was a hardcore neocon for 30 years before I found liberty. So, in that aspect, yes.
Kieran, thank you for the call. And I did not become a libertarian by reading philosophy books. I became one by seeing that government screws up everything it touches. This is Free Talk Live.
If you want to move to the free state and you're looking for some real estate, well, I know a guy who's really great. It's the Realtor Mark Warda.
Looking for a great real estate investment? Consider New Hampshire, which is ground zero for the Liberty Movement. Your first call should be to Mark Warden from Porcupine Real Estate. He's more than just a real estate agent. He's your New Hampshire concierge. Where are the best places to live? Do you want farm, city, the burbs, or forest? Do you want a duplex or multifamily building so that renters pay your mortgage? There are homes in all price ranges in New Hampshire, and Mark can help with financing, too. Invest in liberty and property. Mark Warden can help.
PorcupineRealEstate.com.
Free Talk Live.
This is Free Talk Live. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. Kicking off hour number three. And in studio, it's Daryl.
And Heather.
And Chris.
And we're going to the phones, where we've got Ralph calling in from New Jersey. Ralph, you're on Free Talk Live.
You
Go
know,
ahead with your thoughts.
Okay, you know, I would like to make my case about black criminality, the war on police, and how El Negro Animal...
That's your nickname for Barack Obama.
Oh, that's right. Ghetto Caper... Animal is playing both sides against the middle. Now,
hold on.
I can
so,
give you
how is Barack Obama still responsible for stuff? He's no longer the president. I know you blamed him for everything when he was in charge, but how is it still his fault?
Did you know what President Trump has to say about Obama in the press conference over there in Europe? Did you know what he has to say? I mean, finally, someone has to put this animal in his place. I don't know. President, His Excellency, and I stand saluting him, His Excellency, President Rodrigo III.
I have no clue half of what you just said. I think you said something about Rodrigo Duterte and saluting something.
That's right.
So you salute him.
I salute him. I salute him for putting Obama in his place. But that being said, let me talk
Hold
about
on. So how did Duterte put Obama in his place? And where do you think Obama's place is?
This place is in the ghetto. Where else do you belong?
Oh, jeez.
And Duterte put Obama in the ghetto?
It's not just there. It's Putin. It's President Trump. Put him there. But let's get to the subject matter at hand, if I may. Okay? Black criminality, the war on police. This is fueled by the war on police. Black criminality.
What war on police? What war on police, Ralph?
Well, there was a shooting of a cop in the Bronx.
Sure.
You are well aware of that, right? That's a big splash in the news. Oh, my goodness.
Some crazy person decided to shoot a cop. That doesn't mean
animal.
That there's a war on police.
Hey, Darryl.
It means that a crazy person did something bad.
A black animal.
A crazy person. It doesn't matter what color their skin is.
No, it matters, right? It matters.
Everything matters to you, Ralph. And Ralph, you're a lot closer to being a black man than I am. So if we're going just based off of skin color, then, you know, like, people could say something about you as well.
As a matter of fact, I tell you what, white guilty. Okay? I can't be racist enough if I, you know, judge these people on the content of their character.
Then why do you always bring up Skit? What if you actually do, as you just said, and I don't believe you, but you just said that you judge people on the content of their character, then why always bring up skin color?
Right.
Because that's this is what is being presented in the media.
But that's not the content of their character, Ralph. Thank you for the call.
He said, but that's what's being presented in the media. And I'm like, yes, that is often what's presented in the media. I'm not following for what the media presents me with. I ask my own questions.
There's a difference between using, you know, when you're describing somebody as being black, as using that as just like a adjective versus a stereotype. There's two totally different contexts, you know what I mean? And he keeps using it as a stereotype, not as an adjective. Like, oh, this black person, he keeps saying these black animals.
Right. So, like, if you're describing, you know, tell me, what does the guy look like that, you know,
maybe
robbed
in his
the grocery
mind,
store?
He's...
Well, you need to know. Oh, he was, you know, 6'1", light-skinned, you know, brown hair, blue eyes.
Right.
That, or maybe Ralph needs to differentiate and acknowledge that there are indeed people of color that are good, decent human beings.
Well, yeah. Well, Ralph, every racist won't. Person
there's
that I've ever met will wind up
animals.
Saying, well, that one's okay, but all the rest of them.
Right. It's so false because we
blanket
have
judgments.
You have examples on every possible subject that you could go one way or another.
Right.
You know, Gacy was white, therefore all white people are mass murderers at heart.
Right.
You know, they're serial killers.
Actually,
at heart.
Like the majority of the mass shootings in America have been by white people.
Right, but where I've tried to take Ralph in the past, and we never seem to get to, is black neighborhoods, inner city communities have been devastated by our war on drugs.
Right,
and when you declare war on people, and going back to Richard Nixon, at least according to Ehrlichman, we were going after the blacks, so we were going after heroin,
right?
Because they disagreed with our politics
and hippies.
Yes, I mean, and hippies with marijuana. But the point is if you subjugate people through the use of welfare programs and through a war on drugs,
not
then
to mention things like licensure laws that prevent people from going into specific
occupations,
fields,
right?
Certain occupations, and then you have all kinds of other things that make it incredibly difficult, if not impossible, to open a business.
Sure.
And then you price people out of jobs. That's what minimum wage does. Minimum wage prices people out of jobs.
Makes certain jobs illegal. But the real point is what it comes down to is people will work to feed their families. And if they have to do it through illegal means, then they will do so. If you foster and support black markets, then you also have to understand that black markets have no real way to redress grievances against each other other than through the use of violence. And
right.
And then we do have inner cities that may be primary, you know, heavily populated with blacks or Mexicans or various immigrant groups that have turned more towards crime as a way to sustain their lives.
Right. And a lot of that crime is stuff where there's not an identifiable victim.
Sure.
So, you know, selling cannabis or any other substance, it's only illegal because some
government
somewhere
says it
is. Said it is.
The point is
thing,
if you're... Go ahead.
I was just going to say, the thing that like irks me the most is when police use like informants and undercover cops and do these quote-unquote investigations and literally sell drugs on the streets. It's
right,
like,
just
oh yeah, this is the war on drugs. You're not allowed to sell drugs, but we're going to go sell cocaine to this person and let
right.
you know people sniff and do whatever they want with all their drugs for you know 4 months and just so we can get information on other people that are doing the exact same thing.
The problem is...
When it's all about the money, the cash money.
It is, and it's about somebody trying to impose their will on others.
Yes.
Just, I wish people would take all these arguments, all these problems they have with society, and go keep taking steps back until you get to root cause. And root cause in so many of our issues is a war on drugs.
Yes. Yep. Let's go to Skype, where we've got Modern Drummer calling in. Modern Drummer, you're on Free Talk Live. Go over with your thoughts.
Yeah, I'm not suggesting you do this, but if you were to Google rawnewscosmopolitan.com, you would see an article about a very, very, very obese model.
Okay.
That they did photos of.
And?
The point of it wasn't that this is unhealthy and don't let this happen to you, but it was that this is beautiful.
And?
Okay.
Yeah, that this is beautiful. And my point is, well, for one, I'm pissed off because had I known this, I wouldn't have dragged my butt to the gym for 5 days a week for the last 20 years. I would have just allowed the blubber to accumulate and then just sat back and watched all the chicks flock to me because apparently it's beautiful to be fat. But
so is your issue that they're promoting and glorifying unhealthy behavior?
Bingo.
Yeah, because I picked up on that.
The problem, so it always starts out with, in this case, it's not nice to bully fat people. And everybody goes,
it's not nice to bully anybody.
Yes, Daryl.
Yeah, but I get what he's saying, though, because this actually came up in conversation the other day with a friend of mine where there were actually people that were saying their doctors were being like discriminating against them for basically diagnosing them as being unhealthy because of their weight. So,
I hear the music. Can you hold me?
I'd rather not.
No, let's hold him. Hold him. I invoke my right as a co-host to hold him.
They're both wanting to hold over the guy that wants to talk about fat shaming. We'll hold him over. This is Free Talk Live. Your calls and thoughts welcome. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. This is Free Talk Live. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. Your calls and thoughts welcome. How would you like to try the best pillow that you have ever used and try it risk-free for 60 days? I'm talking about My Pillow. Yes, I have one, but you can have your very own. My Pillow is designed to fit to the shape of your body and hold your neck in the proper position. I've been using this thing for well over a year, and it is the best pillow I've ever used. And unlike a regular pillow that winds up getting all nasty and disgusting with dead skin and dirt, you can actually take your MyPillow, throw it in the washer, throw it in the dryer, and still use it for something other than a fire starter. Go to MyPillow.com. Use code FTL to get your very own MyPillow at half price, or you can get a second pillow free of charge. And remember, if you don't like it for some reason in the first 60 days, you can get your money back. And the pillow itself is guaranteed to last 10 years. That's MyPillow.com, code FTL. We're going back to Skype where we've got someone calling themselves Modern Drummer. Had called in. Apparently, he was looking for images of some nude Cosmo models. Came across someone who was a little overweight. And he's upset that there was an overweight model. And Modern Drummer, continue with your thoughts.
Well, I'm upset that this is being promoted and celebrated because it's, I think, pretty obvious that we can understand that being overweight, and especially 400, 500 pounds, that isn't healthy. And the other thing I don't like about it is...
Who's saying that it's healthy?
Well, they're saying, well, I've seen them say this before. Where
who?
Healthy.
Who is saying this? They Zero. Is just like some unnamed collective. Is it the editors of the magazine? Is it the model? Is it fans of the model?
Okay. I don't have a specific they, but I will narrow it down this much. That this is a facet of the social justice movement. And many people in the social justice movement have a phrase, and that is healthy at any size. If you were to Google that, you'd see it all over the place.
Right. Well, there are some people that are, based on a BMI scale, are considerably overweight, but have a body fat percentage of like 5% because they've got a lot
of
muscle.
This wouldn't apply to them, Daryl. This is basically applying to the people that literally are overweight to the point where it's hurting their life, their
grossly
overall
obese.
Health.
Right. But my point is, the way obese is defined. It doesn't matter if you're overweight because you're muscular or right. you're overweight because you've got a lot of fat.
But right. I think the question is putting the message out there that, you know what, regardless of your size, that's healthy. That I do agree with the caller. I take issue with that.
Yeah.
Now, whether that gets promoted, that's just free speech. I'm sorry. People can promote all kinds of
right. and,
unhealthy
you know,
stuff if they
some
want.
Some people people that are overweight.
Okay.
Some people like people that are severely underweight.
Some people don't mind shaving 20 years off their life. That's fine.
right. Like, I don't right. like it. I want to shorten it up. But the point okay. is there's a difference between being attracted to something and being attractive towards actually being healthy. Well, I agree that it is misleading and wrong for people to say healthy at any size, because that's obviously a
right.
falsehood. They got a right to say it. People have a right to question them about it.
But I have something here on my phone. This is from, you know, a couple years ago, but you can Google like tons of other cases where this doctor, I guess, was in trouble for calling a patient obese. It hurt the woman's feelings, so she filed a complaint saying it was hurtful, not helpful. And it's like, now you have doctors under fire because
right.
we live in this society where we want to, you know, baby everyone for their bad decisions. And, you know, like, where do you draw the line?
Well, are you looking for somebody to actually draw the line? I think it's a personal responsibility thing.
Right. And Chris, you've known me for several years. A modern drummer, thank you for the call.
This is actually in New Hampshire, too. She filed the complaint about it. It was investigated by a panel of the New Hampshire Board of Medicine.
Sure.
Yeah.
Turn to government to fix your problems.
But
Daryl, yeah, you were, I don't know how much you weighed, but it seems like there's half of you here.
That I know of, I was 317 at my largest. I may have been higher than that
right.
and just never stepped on a scale.
Right.
And now I'm, you know, somewhere between 180, 185, and I'm running another half marathon on Saturday.
Now, that'll kill you.
Well, only if I wind up getting run over by a car, but they
exactly.
closed down the street.
I think they have red light cameras.
I don't know if Portland, Maine has red light cameras, but you know, they closed
oh,
down
my.
The street, so I don't have to worry. And I wish Sarah were on hold so we could talk
exactly.
to her about
it's a
running
perfect
over
opportunity.
I wish she would listen so she sees how many times we like name drop her.
but
like, you've made a choice. You've made a
right.
choice to
I made
lead
a choice.
A-
I was inspired by Penn Jillette. Who he wound up going on this drastic diet, dropping like 80 pounds in 90 days.
Wow.
And I was like, all right, I can do this too.
What was your method? Like, how'd you lose all the weight?
Drastically changed my diet, cut out bread, cut out most processed foods, cut out things with added sugar, cut out sodas. And for a while, and I don't recommend this at all, because I didn't have medical supervision when I did this, but there were times when my calorie intake was around 600 calories a day.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I don't recommend that at all.
Right.
But it helped me drop 140 something pounds.
Yeah. And yours was, it was gradual, and you know, and you started exercising. We could
right.
all see you getting into much better shape. So.
Right.
I applaud you for that.
Yeah.
But again, if people want to live unhealthy lives, it's hard to take a libertarian stance and say, no, you must do this, or no, it's illegal for you to say that healthy at any size. No, I'm not going to tell you that, but I'm going to encourage the people around me. Hey, if you mm-hmm. hear people say that, spout that crap, question
right.
it. Do some research on your own.
Right. And, you know, the only thing that I was mentioning or wanting to point out when I mentioned about, you know, the people that are listed as overweight, even though they're very muscular, is the BMI scale is completely flawed.
Sure.
And that's something that, you know, a lot of people just adhere to that very strictly. Well, the BMI says, well, you know, like fitness models are technically overweight in accordance with the BMI.
Right.
Because muscle weighs more than, you know, like a pound of muscle is going to take up a lot less size than a pound of fat.
Right. Yeah. So you're saying, save your fat, you'll weigh less. Lose weight, be fat.
No.
No?
See, I'm all
no.
for like people just doing whatever makes them happy, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, if you're overweight, you can still be happy, but just know like what you're doing, you know what I mean? And I don't want to see anything bad to happen to people. So it's not like I judge people because of their weight or anything. It's just, you know, I want people to live long, happy, healthy lives.
Right. And you can do that through encouraging them and offering to help and things like that. But, you know, shutting down freedom of speech because you don't happen to agree with the message, that's right. just and as bad if you're
big,
talking
you're still
about
beautiful.
Government. Right. Just but that's a different question.
And exactly. Yeah, it just seemed to me that the caller was upset that he was looking for nude photos and saw somebody overweight and decided he was going to call nationally syndicated talk radio to talk about it. And you can too. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. This is Free Talk Live.
A funny thing happens when you don't advertise. Nothing. Modern advertisers have been trained to look for trackability in their advertising, and web search ads are great for that. They also help you get the consumer that's looking for products like yours in the moment. But they're expensive, and they do nothing to convince people to try your product segment in the first place. They help you get a bigger piece of the pie, but branding mediums like radio grow the pie itself. Free Talk Live's on more than 150 stations, and we can help advertisers with little budgets and big ones. Send me an email, mark@freetalklive.com. It's mark@freetalklive.com.
This is Free Talk Live. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. In studio tonight, it's Daryl.
And Heather.
And Chris.
And Chris, you've got a really interesting story out of Middleton, where Ohio?
Ohio.
Where the police apparently are wanting to institute some kind of three-strike system for people that use Narcan. We'll get into that in just a moment, but your calls and thoughts first. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. We go to Sarah calling in from New Mexico. Sarah, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead with your thoughts.
Yes, I was told that there is a dilemma of tracking calculating kangaroo movements to program them into the automated cars in Australia. Because it's a problem because
they're
hopping and jumping.
Hold on. So somebody wants to automate kangaroos to get them to learn how to use self-driving cars?
No. They want to program, not the kangaroos, the computer, the automated cars.
They wanted
the kangaroos are going to program computers.
No, quit being Daryl. Daryl, what she's saying?
Yeah,
they want to use kangaroo movements to help teach self-driving cars like how to avoid accidents with pedestrians.
No, so they won't hit the kangaroos in Australia.
Oh, okay, so they don't hit kangaroos.
It's kind of like, you know, here in New Hampshire, we have these big giant signs in part of the state that say, danger, moose.
Right.
So I'm guessing in Australia, they probably have signs that say, danger, kangaroos.
Of course they do.
And it makes sense that you want to program the self-driving cars not to run over anything in the street, whether it be a human or a kangaroo. So let me guess. What's the problem?
They let a bunch of kangaroos out into the highway and see how many get hit.
But the thing is, the dilemma is that it's hard to program it because it's every kangaroo is hopping and jumping erratically and differently, so that it's very hard to program them as like a pattern of movement into the computer. That's the problem.
Who ever would have thought that predicting animal movement would be difficult?
I'm sorry, I'm just trying. I'm picturing myself like flying down the highway in Australia. I'm not sure if I'm driving on the left side of the car or the right side of the car. I don't know which way they go.
You sit in the middle.
Do you? Okay. Well, I'm driving in the middle of my car in one lane or the other. And a herd, a gaggle, a pack, what do you call a group of kangaroos? Somebody's going to have to Google that. Flies out in front of me. And you're right. I would assume they would go across the road, but they bounce and... Boy, that just sounds like a mess.
A ruse. It's a ruse of kangaroos.
A ruse of ruse.
Which makes sense. Sarah, thank you for the call.
See, now I wanted to hear more from...
and thoughts. Welcome. 855-450-FREE. Now, I you know, let's sort of, you know, look at this outside of Australia, because in New Mexico, where Sarah lives, they have, you know, all kinds of creatures. They've got javelinas and coyotes and probably some wild horses.
Sure.
Jackalopes. You know, those things just come out of nowhere.
Right, but they might have antelope and they have deer and all sorts of things. It's one of the things for self-driving car technology. I guess it would be easy for them to detect something in the road, but the complicated part would be tracking and predicting its movement.
Right, but even if it's, say, a human that is in the road, well, is that person going to jump back towards the sidewalk? Are they going to try to continue crossing the street?
Right.
You don't know.
Or are they just going to freeze, which most people do when they see headlights coming out?
Right. So, you know, like the whole programming self-driving cars things, there's a problem because someone's ethics are being programmed into that car.
Correct.
And it doesn't matter whether you're trying to, you know, avoid running over a kangaroo or avoid running over Sarah.
Right. But is it
somebody's ethics are being programmed?
Do I hit the one person or do I avoid the one person and run the risk of hitting the three people that are beyond?
Right. Or what happens if there's a cliff to your right and a car to your left and, you know, a gaggle of kangaroos in front of you? Do you run over the gaggle of kangaroos? Do you drive off the cliff or do you run into the car to your left?
It's a ruse of ruse.
Yeah, I know.
You Googled that, Daryl.
I just like saying gaggle.
They're all good questions. And I think technology's amazing how fast it's progressing. Whatever version 1.0 comes out to be, it's probably not going to be the greatest, but I think as time goes on through machine learning and through artificial intelligence, we're going to see some real smart technology coming out.
This is probably the best excuse or rationale for teleportation devices. And then you don't have to drive. You can just, you know, like beam me up and then go where you need to go.
There you go, Daryl. But unfortunately, we live in this world that has some limits, and I think we'll probably see the technology of self-driving cars gain widespread acceptance before we see teleportation.
And, you know, like, then there are other problems, such as in northern climates, where during the winter time you get this weird white fluffy stuff that covers up the red and the yellow, or not the red, but the white and the yellow lines on the road. Which means that the self-driving car is not going to be able to sense the lines to know where your lane is.
They have other ways of doing that. GPS, they can use positioning systems. They can do radar off the ditches off either side.
GPS is not always accurate.
Sure.
You know, it's within plus or minus 10 feet. Well, plus or minus 10 feet is opposite lane of traffic.
Well, you're used to the civilian system. The military system is actually there is a little bit more accurate. But you're right. Those are all things.
Suggesting that the military is going to allow Google to use their system for their self-driving car.
They have loosened up those standards so civilians can use the more accurate form already. But there's other things. There's you know, you could put GPS sort of mile markers down that notify you exactly where you're at, and they could do it that way. So I don't think anything technologically is outside the realm of possibility. Some of it's just going to take a little bit longer.
And like I think some of it's going to be more difficult in certain climates.
Yeah, and the self-driving car thing's always kind of struck me as a real challenge because it is literally life and death.
Right.
You know, people will live and make it to their destination, or you could die on the way to your destination.
And then, you know, there's always the people that say, well, you could just always take over control of the self-driving car. Well, really? Can you? Because some of these don't have a steering wheel.
Yeah. And
then what happens if, you know, you do try to do a manual override, but the self-driving car determines that you're making a wrong decision and override your override? What happens when the self-driving cars basically become sentient?
Daryl, you just have to go to that next level on every one of your questions. I think the marketplace is going to sort all these things out.
If it can override your override, then basically that's a level of sentience.
So when are we going to bring the liberty question into this?
Which is?
Well, I don't know. All these things you paint out seem to be things that the government would mandate, that there has to be a steering wheel and you have to have the ability to override it. What's the market going to demand? That's my question.
Oh, well, I'm not going to use one of these self-driving car things because of the problems that I just laid out. I don't want there to be some government mandate over anything. I'm just pointing out
here are
the problems that I see with self-driving cars.
Okay, Luddite.
Yeah, the guy that uses the internet is a Luddite. The guy that, you know, has been listed as a Bitcoin pioneer. Not that I call myself that, but I have been referred to because I was, you know, the first presidential candidate to accept it.
Ah, there you go.
You know, yeah, Bitcoin pioneer guy is a Luddite.
Luddite. Author recommended book, The Third Millennium. It was a history of the next 3,000 years, and one of the big things that happened supposedly in the first part of our century was somebody driving from Los Angeles to New York asleep in a self-driving car.
And running over kangaroos. This is Free Talk Live. Your calls and thoughts welcome. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. Watch out for those kangaroos when you're driving down the street. This is Free Talk Live, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. Possibly time for you and your thoughts if you call in now. In studio tonight, it's Daryl.
And Heather.
And Chris.
Have you ever wanted to start your own website or blog, but you've not been able to put that idea into action? Well, you're in luck because HostGator, one of the top hosting companies out there, is offering a special deal to Free Talk Live listeners. Go to HostGator.com/FTL and you can get up to 50% off their regular prices. Hosting your own website or blog can be intimidating, but HostGator makes it easy. HostGator offers a simple one-click, easy installation for WordPress, and they have 24/7 over-the-phone or live chat tech support and a very intuitive and user-friendly control panel that puts the power of creation and the simplicity of use into the hands of you, the customer. HostGator has a 99.99% uptime rating, so you don't have to worry about outages. To get that special offer of up to 50% off for Free Talk Live listeners, go to HostGator.com/FTL.
So we kind of teased the story talking about the city of Middletown, Ohio, and what they were doing. And we have a story here that comes to us from perhaps we've never referenced this website before.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever referenced this one.
BlueLivesMatter.blue. And the headline is City of Middletown says, let them die, proposes three-strike system for Narcan use.
So, Chris, what is Narcan?
Sure. Narcan is a prescription drug. It's sold in sort of an auto injector, I believe, and it's used in almost all areas of the country by emergency medical personnel to quickly put the end to an overdose. It acts as an opiate inhibitor.
Yes.
So if it goes into your system, it goes and it blocks all the opiate receptors in your brain. So heroin or anything like that can't stick to those receptors,
right,
and cause you to OD. It's pretty much instant.
There are some places where they've actually wound up passing statutes or laws saying that it is no longer a prescription thing. You can get it over the counter in some places.
Right. Like here in New Hampshire, I know Daryl and I both supported a bill that allowed families to procure Narcan if they had someone in their family who had an opiate addiction.
And my understanding, most of what is being sold in New Hampshire, and it might be all of, but I know at least, you know, the vast majority is a nasal injector.
Oh, yes,
version.
Thank you.
That way you don't have to, you know, worry about
injector or anything like
that. No auto injector. There's no needle involved.
Right.
You put the thing in the nose and then push the little syringe.
I think you're absolutely correct on that. And that's one of the things about Narcan is it is very simple to use and it undoubtedly saves lives. But the people, at least some people in Middletown, Ohio, disagree with that.
Right. And most of the testimony opposing the legislation here in New Hampshire to allow it to be sold over the counter
came
was basically from the police.
law enforcement.
Saying if we can't arrest them, they should just die.
Yeah.
That's not the exact words they used, but when
that's
you boil down what they said, it was basically if we can't arrest them, they should die.
Yep. So here's the story. In an effort to fight rising costs to deal with overdoses and its heroin problem, the city of Middleton wants to implement a controversial proposal that would let addicts die. City Council member Dan Picard has proposed a, quote, three-strike system, unquote. After a person overdoses twice and is revived with Narcan, that person has to perform a certain number of hours of community service equal to the amount of money spent on the emergency response, according to WLWT.
All right, so here's an idea. Why not just bill them for, you know, the service?
Right, because they are trying to affect behavior. And as if treating someone with community service is going to cure an addiction, that seems to be their thought process.
Right, but, you know, charging some, oh, you went to the emergency room and we provided X service, here's the bill.
Right.
Which I'm guessing is happening anyway.
Right, they do that too. But again, this is about trying to affect behavior. The third strike is the controversial part. Picard said, quote, if the dispatcher determines that the person who overdosed is someone who has been part of the program for two previous overdoses and has not completed the community service and has not cooperated in the program, then we wouldn't dispatch,
now,
unquote.
Three times in their life? Three times in a year, three times in 5 years.
They don't offer the details here, but I guess it's part of since they've had Narcan available. Maybe that's it.
I don't know how I feel about this.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
He said that it's not the. He said that this is not the answer to the city's drug problem, but an attempt to save city finances. Picard said, "Quote: We've got to do what we've got to do to maintain our financial security, and this is just costing us too much money," unquote.
All right, so
what are your thoughts on that? Do you think they should just keep Narcanning people?
I think if you live in a neighborhood or in an area that has a lot of heroin use and maybe somebody close to you has an opiate problem, then I would feel personally morally obligated to procure my own Narcan.
Yeah, right. I don't think we should be subsidizing Narcan.
Well,
no,
she
asked what my feelings were. That's my feeling.
Right. We don't know if it's legal in Ohio for you to procure your own Narcan.
Right. But I didn't talk about legality. I said I would procure Narcan.
Right.
And if it's go to jail, and let's say that, you know, my cousin was living with me and he had a heroin problem and Narcan were against the law, I'd still go out and get Narcan.
Right.
I'd go buy it somewhere
right.
else.
I'd
break the law to save somebody's life.
If while you're, you know, driving back from Pennsylvania or Michigan, you get pulled over, oh, you've got Narcan, you go to jail, directly to jail, because we don't allow you to have that here.
That's fine, because I'm doing that based on...
They assume that you have it in your car because you do drugs or something.
My point is this is one of those points. It's a moral question, and it's a question of principle. Do you do the right thing, or do you do what the legal thing is to do?
I mean, right. If I had Narcan, I would Narcan someone, because I think people make mistakes. But at the same time, I don't think the government should be subsidizing it. I don't think people should be thrown in jail for doing drugs. But, you know, if you're going to do drugs, have your own Narcan ready.
Yeah.
Right. And again, you know, that's why I brought up the legality, because
right.
they might not be able to procure their own Narcan.
Yeah. Like you could not in New Hampshire until what? Last year?
About a year ago.
Yeah.
Right. And the Narcan bill here in New Hampshire passed almost simultaneously as a 911 immunity bill, to where if, say, you or a friend, you know, you're having a party, somebody overdoses, you no longer wind up facing jail time for calling paramedics because your friend OD'd, or
right.
your friend doesn't face jail time because you OD'd. And, you know, again, this is one of those things to where there's a lot of layers
yeah.
here.
Yep.
And from the medical standpoint, paramedics have a duty to do everything they can to save someone's life if they are able to do so.
Right. And the story continues. In response, the Middleton Fire Department who probably has something to do with emergency medical services too, said that, quote, by law, unquote, it has to give Narcan if it responds to an overdose. That appears to be why the city wants to avoid telling the fire department about the overdoses. Overdoses in the city have already doubled for this year. In 2016, there were a total of 532 overdoses as of mid-June. There have been 577 overdoses so far this year.
So I'm just going to reread those numbers. Yep. All of last year, 532 overdoses. So far this year, as of a couple of weeks ago, 577 yep. overdoses in this town in Ohio.
Yep. In 2016, the Middleton Fire Department spent more than $11,000 on Narcan, while this year $30,000 has already been spent. Officials said that the increasing amount is due to more overdoses and the strength of the heroin that the addicts are using. Middleton Fire Chief Paul Lawley said, quote, we are faced with stress on our services, particularly the EMS services, where we can do 6 to 8 opioid overdose runs a day, unquote.
I don't get it. Like, what the heck is going on? Is this like the zombie apocalypse?
Remember that little story I told you a little while ago about the war on drugs and how unintended consequences?
Like, has this always been going on? I just never knew about it. Like, why all of a sudden now are everyone doing heroin and dropping like flies?
Well, because government, because war on drugs.
That's
because
part of it. And a lot of it has to do with doctors overprescribing opioids and people getting addicted while they're under a doctor's care.
True also.
And then the war on drugs makes it to where they can't go get help. That's it for tonight. Always online at freetalklive.com.
Hi, this is Mark Edge of Free Talk Live. Michael W. Dean's book, User's Manual for the Human Experience, changed my life. In a culture that attempts to turn you into a compliant victim, this book gives you implementable steps on everything from how to be aware of your environment walking down the street to business, to how to handle a toxic person in your life. If you're a human, you need to read this book at least once. Go to Amazon and get the Kindle version, or paperback, or an audiobook of A User's Manual for the Human Experience.